recording.
Welcome to Creating Cash Flow for July 10th, 2022. So Crickets, you are a cash flow kitten. I'm so happy you are here. I'm actually going to read, you have two questions. I'm going to read them both because there's a through line between them that I think I'm going to address as we talk about each question.
Okay.
And this will give people an idea of what you're doing. So, you know, your side biz is film festival consulting. Can you tell, just to clarify for me, what your regular job is?
I am the director of a film festival department at a film school.
Got it.
So I have a lot of experience with this. I just want to start building private clients.
Right. Okay, perfect. So your question. When you enrolled in Creating Cash Flow, my plan was to develop a monthly subscription service that provides a list of reputable film festivals around the world with early and regular deadlines, because early deadlines are cheaper. And why was that the idea? Because one, I see filmmakers struggle so much with identifying good festivals, besides the insanely competitive ones like Sundance. And number two, so many filmmakers waste a lot of their limited budget on late and extended deadlines for the festivals. And after listening to the course, Creating Cash Flow course, I'm starting to think that the subscription service should come later. Why not look for private clients first and go ahead and provide them with a hand-selected list of 25 to 30 festivals besides Sundance that I think could be a good match for them and their film? After all, I have that information on hand. I've been building spreadsheets for almost 2 years now, and private clients will get you to cash faster than the time it will take to figure out how to create a subscription service. First of all, 100%. You right. Then I started making a list of all the things I see filmmakers struggle with that I actually enjoy doing: writing log lines, director statements and bios, picking pictures for press kits and writing captions, developing the short social media intros that more and more festivals are asking for, and prepping for Q&As that are going to be filmed and then live on the internet forever. It's not just where you can do a Q&A, bomb it, and it just disappears anymore. Yeah. So now you have a lot of ideas and you'd like help in figuring out how to focus. And you still like the subscription service idea because you could offer it at a lower price point to more starving artists, and yet dot, dot, dot. Okay. And so that was about kind of the concept of what you want to offer. Right. And then the question about clients. While I see the value of an intake call, I feel like I need another layer of vetting before I commit to developing a strategy for a client. I want to assess the film that they want to get into festivals, because at the school I work out, I do this for my students as an organic part of their education. I say to them that the only way to learn to make a film is to make a film, and that some films are made to actually learn on. With private clients, I'm not sure how to navigate an assessment period. I want to make sure that I can actually deliver information and services that will be worth their money. If I don't believe their film is strong enough to find its audience, I don't think I'll feel comfortable taking their money. And of course, I hate the idea of hurting someone's feelings. And that's not, you know, when you're in a school and students are there and totally open to feedback, that's a whole different story. But if people are like, help me get my film into festivals, and you're like, what if it's not ready? What do I do? Okay. So this is very interesting. And I almost want to do the second question first, clients. Because I think the private client idea is a really good one. And if you have this service of like, you've got a film and I'm going to help you. I'm going to give you stuff that you need. You can either have this package or this package of what you need to start getting it into festivals. But before I allow you to purchase or we work together, I have to see if I feel your film is a good match for what I offer.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you can really do that, because that's not what they're coming to you for. The only reason filmmaker, and I'm walking through this in my head. So you have experience in a different way than I do. So we're collaborating, you and I, on this right now. But if I have a film and I'm going to pay money to you to help me organize the festival thing and get all my assets together, I believe in my film.
Right.
I'm not really looking for anybody to tell me if it's good enough.
Mm-hmm.
You could have a service where you go, if you would like me with my seasoned eye to assess your film,
mm-hmm,
before you invest more in it, I can. I'm wondering how many people would even bite on that.
That's a really interesting question. That's a really interesting question. I think my concern is, how can I take someone's money if I don't? I am not saying I am the arbiter of taste at all here, but I do a lot of risk assessment. That's a big part of what I'm doing here. There are over 9,000 film festivals in the world now, and it's really overwhelming for filmmakers. And so I'm like, okay, how do we narrow the entire planet and the whole landscape, mm-hmm, and find the festivals that are the right match? Mm-hmm. And it's terrifying to me, the idea that someone would be disappointed in my work because they didn't get into festivals. But obviously I can't guarantee that anyone's going to get into any festival. No one has that sort of control.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Except the festivals themselves. So I don't know. That's my big fear.
Okay. I'm so glad you said that, because that is the kernel that I think we need to address first.
Okay.
You will need, if you want to go into this area of business, you're going to need to separate out your concern that they're throwing their money away because their film sucks or it just isn't good enough yet.
Yet, exactly, yet.
Right, but your concern, your nose in their pocketbook, your concern that they're throwing away some money. You have to separate that from you enabling them to go on a learning journey.
Okay.
Which they are on. They do not want anybody to stop them on this learning journey. You don't make a film without some ego involved. Mm-hmm. You don't put your art out there and try to get it into festivals without believing in it.
Right.
They're not looking. If they're at the point where they're entering it in festivals, they are past the point where they're looking for feedback on whether or not this film is good enough.
Gotcha.
90%.
That's true. So
you have to put yourself in the position of, what I'm doing for folks is helping them go on this learning journey. Okay. They might look back and go, oh yeah, we weren't ready yet. But they're not going to believe that until they viscerally experience it.
Okay.
I think this is true for all young, lovely artists. We just have to, you know, learn the hard way sometimes. And you will, if you have ambivalence about what you're offering and you're like, I can't offer it unless they're super ready. And because, you know, their film could be very ready, but they might not be ready as people.
Mm-hmm.
And their journey could go awry because of that. And you won't be able to prevent that, certainly.
Right.
You want to assess clients to see if they're crazy or idiots. You don't want to work with crazy, idiot, toxic people, unserious. Those are things you can certainly weed your clients out. Mm-hmm. And certainly if you're a coach, you want to make sure someone who is wanting coaching doesn't actually need therapy, because that's a, you know, so there's different things I look for too, but I don't think, because the people are not coming to you for your assessment of where their film's at. If you want to put that on your website as something that you offer, I'm just wondering how many people are going to be like hunting down someone to help them with festivals. I think that just means they're beyond the point of assessing their film. Now, if they come to you and they're like, well, we're not sure, we think, we might, you can go. Mm-hmm. If you want to pay me, I will look at your film and give you my opinion if you want to. And a few people, I think, might take you up on that for an extra fee. I will come to your house and disrupt things, okay? But I don't think my guess is not a lot of your clients will take you up on that.
You're absolutely right about the ego part of it. I've consistently have to address this with students.
Yeah.
Consistently. Bless them. They either think their work sucks and it doesn't, or they think their work is amazing and it's not ready yet. There's a wide variety in between, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. Because also you have to make the, when I say have to, because I try not to speak in black and white language, but if you're going to turn this into a business, you have to meet your clients as if they're filmmakers in the industry versus people trying students with their first film.
Yes. Like,
they're not students. Yes. They're humans who are giving you money. So it's a collegiate kind of thing. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's okay for people to give you money and have a learning experience out of it. Mm-hmm. Because you will have them sign an agreement to where they acknowledge that you're just giving them the assets and there's no guarantee for how those assets will perform in a marketplace, because there's too many variables.
Right.
Every single year, the variables change. So yeah. Yeah. But you have to treat these folks not as students.
Right.
And yeah, if you can do that, then there's another thing I want to talk to you about, though. Then this is definitely an interesting, viable side business, I think. The other thing, though, is this is where the brain goes, especially if you've worked in like the educational field. Oh, this is what they need. They need this. They need this and they need this. People don't pay for things that they need. They Right. only pay for what they want. What they think is going to help them get to the next thing that they want. So this, when you're talking about this and selling, you know, the sizzle of it, it's about what they want. Mm-hmm. You want to get in as many film festivals as you can that are, no, you don't, I would say marketing wise, you don't want to get in as many film festivals as you can. You only want to get in film festivals that are right for your movie. And I know you want to do this in the budget that you have. So you can probably use an expert eye who can help you find the right festivals, prioritize them, work within your budget, and perhaps give you these assets as well. Mm-hmm. So you see, you're sort of reoriented. It's not about all the festivals. It's about the right ones. Oh, because then right. The question is, oh yeah. Okay. Well, how do we find out what the right ones are? You're right. Well, yeah. Well, that's where you come in.
Yes.
I have years of experience, you know, assessing films and matching. And there's over 9,000 festivals now. The good news is there's more marketplaces and more opportunities for your film to get seen. The bad news is there's more marketplaces and more opportunities for your film to get seen.
Right.
You know, and so this is where, and you might, and the skills that it took you to make this film aren't necessarily the same skills that it's going to take for you to get that film in front of the right eyes. But a great set of eyes to get it in front of are mine. Because I can do boop a doop a doop a doop a doo. And I would, you know, there's like two plans. Like, because my guess is people are always going to come to you with a budget that's not enough. Because, you know,
yes,
that's the life.
That's so, one of my fears.
Oh, well, they'll find the money. If you can educate them on the value of finding a little more money to do this, it's sort of like, you know, you can tell where a filmmaker's at, because the first level are the filmmakers who don't think the sound person is important, and they don't understand why the sound person is really a very expensive role to film. And they're like, yeah, can't we get around with that? But it's like, no, you can't. And there's a reason they're expensive and it's hard to find them. You need a good one too. Like, you know, so you're talking to, this is the other thing, you're not talking to all the filmmakers, you're talking to filmmakers, and you can say, you know, if you're only interested in me, and this is where the flattery comes in, you're only interested in me if you are a filmmaker who's in this for the long haul, who's serious about investing in your career, and you've already invested so much in this film that it would behoove that you're thinking, and you can get inside their head, you're thinking, oh my God, another, whatever your thing is, another $1,200 to find out of nowhere. It's like, yeah, but this investment is also going to save you likely that much in extension fees and hitting the deadline, you know, late deadline fees. And you probably won't apply to as many film festivals as you probably would. So this is one of those investments that's actually going to save you money and educate you and make this, and not educate you, and make this whole process quicker next time. Your job is to shift their perspective from like, I don't want to pay another thing, to like, oh yeah, actually we really need this.
Yeah, the way that I've been thinking about it in terms of, I can provide an assessment of the films that would be a good match, or the festivals that would be a good match for the film. So that's one part of it. Mm-hmm. And I have done that for clients before and come up with like criteria for them and then send them off. And then as they're off, I'm like, are they going to, do they have enough patience to do the research? Do they have enough, like, are they going to be able to really put this into practice? And some people do. Documentarians are excellent at this. They love research, right? But it concerns me, actors, for example, and filmmakers who don't like research. They just want to be on set and things like that. Mm-hmm. And that's where I started thinking, I can really streamline this process and save them hundreds of hours because I've already done the work. Mm-hmm. I know when those deadlines are. I know which festivals in, you know, Montana are a good choice for your neo-Western, right. You know? Like,
yeah. And that's a selling point. The hundreds of hours. There's 9,000 festivals. what you're going to do is run out of steam and just throw some spaghetti at the wall. And you'll likely just pick the one you've heard of before, which may not be the most advantageous for your film.
For your film.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have this wonderful, all these little nuggets of like perspective shifts that you, when you talk about your business and on your website and wherever else you talk about it, it's like, you want to just have your person go, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh God, oh yeah. Okay. I want to save hours. I want to save money. I don't know how to do this myself. Let's hire her.
Right.
And then it comes down to, do they have a choice between, okay, you can hire me for A, B, and C, or you can have the whole enchilada.
Right. What do you think?
Well, I think you should have two. I think you should have two choices.
Okay.
Because there's always the people who are like, oh, I came with the budget and hoping A, B, and C, but now I kind of need the whole enchilada. Because even when people are like, I don't have any money, that doesn't mean anything. Well, it means one thing. It means I don't really want to spend the money here. It doesn't necessarily mean they don't have the money or can't get the money. You know? So your business is not the money. That's for them to figure out. And they're going to have to figure money out. That's like the second job of a filmmaker. Job one, make a film. Job two, figure out how to get money for it. Like that's going to be a lifelong thing.
Right.
So your response to, oh gosh, I don't know. Yeah. This is a business about getting crafty, about getting money. Mm-hmm. And I'll be here for you.
Great.
And that's you taking that's not you being manipulative. It's you taking a stand and going, yeah, you're going to have to get good at this. And I'm not going to help you not get good at it. I'm going to actually help you get good at it. Mm-hmm. By doing business in this way with you. Okay. I'm going to help you step up to the plate. So that's a gift you're giving them right off the bat. Mm-hmm. And then there'll be people that money's not the problem. And so they'll be like, yeah, I want the whole enchilada and write the log lines and do the things. Great.
Right.
And then you just have like, this includes this many of these, this many of this, or this many hours or however you're going to divide it. And then if it goes beyond that, if they want more than that, or they want revisions or whatever, then you just tag on like, well, then it's this per hour.
Right.
Go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth or whatever. And you can just play with that as your business evolves. Mm-hmm. Like see what people want or what little obstacles come up or what you need to fold in and what you need to separate out. Like you'll figure that part out.
Right.
And we can certainly talk about it at a later date. I don't think that's a concern, but sort of like the smaller package of, you know, I will give you 20 to 30 festivals that are right for your film, which means I have to watch the film and I have to think about your film. And then I have to, you know, figure that out and deliver it to you. So that takes time. How much time do you think that would take?
Well, I also have people fill out a questionnaire. So it's not just about the film itself. It's about the filmmaker. Mm-hmm. It's about who they are, where they're from, what their interests are. And the goal is to not just get the film into festivals, but to find the natural audience for the film and the filmmaker. And that really is about career building. It's not just this film, as Kate was saying, it's laying the foundation for the future as well. And, so kind of thinking through that and watching the film, that's already 2 hours.
Uh-huh.
And then doing the research and creating that list, I don't do it for the students. They have to do it for themselves. Mm-hmm. I give them suggestions, but It's a different thing. It's part of their educational experience. But for me to actually do it, that I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Would that be an additional 3 hours? Would that be an additional 2 hours? Five? I don't know.
What would you guess on average?
I would say 3 to do the work, and then like another 1 or 2 to put it together in some presentational way. Two, let's say 2, maybe even 3.
Yeah. And then onboarding, just dealing with a client, answering the first email, setting up whatever, giving them the thing. Okay, that's just another hour. And then do you have like little random bits of information that could also be useful to somebody? You're handing over all this festival data. Do you have, could you put together like a little PDF of like, and here's my advice to you?
Yes.
Because that adds value to what they're buying. Ooh, and you get my PDF of my 20, you know, name it. I would just say like, you don't have to use this language, but like my 20 golden nuggets or my 20 pieces of advice that every filmmaker needs to know, or like the 20 things that not enough filmmakers, like something enticing, sizzle it up with a good title of like, where they're like, oh yeah, I definitely want that too.
Secrets of successful submissions.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. So they, you watch their movie, you assess their film, you match them with festivals, you package that up in an easily accessible spreadsheet or whatever for them, plus they get your PDF.
Yeah.
Okay. That's so, and that is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours. So how much do you think you would charge for this?
I have no idea.
I know you don't, but how much would you like to charge for it? Like, what number makes you slightly uncomfortable and yet feels right?
$750, but I want to say more.
What is your heart desire, Cricket?
$1,000.
You're a goddamn professional. You're drawing on years and years, and you, how many hours have you spent making the database that you now have?
A billion hours. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I think it should be over 1,000 as well.
You do.
So, yeah.
Okay.
So I think it should be either like $1,200 or $1,400.
I was just starting to write down $1,200.
Okay. That was the first number that came to mind. That might be a good number to start with. And then as soon as you're super comfortable with that, you can hike it up to $1,400.
Yeah.
Because here's the deal. They're hiring a consultant. That's what they're doing. They're like, they can DIY this shit. But
absolutely.
If you want to like cut to the chase with an expert, with some expert guidance in this particular area, you know, they're going to be paying the person that helps them with PR more. They're going to be paying the person who helps them with distribution deals more. Yeah. You're going to be paying them more. It's that person, it comes out of the deals that person helps them make, but they're still going to be paying all these people more than they're paying you if they hire them for the thing.
Oh, this is so true.
Yeah.
So true. So,
1200. It's like, if you're scared of that number, you need to think about filmmaking as a potential career path, you know? It's hard to say, but it's true.
And if, by the way, I didn't state this, I don't think, but I want to specialize in short films because it's just very different from feature films. And if a film gets shortlisted for the Oscars. A short film gets shortlisted for the Oscars, not even nominated yet.
Right.
But if it is going to get shortlisted, you need between $10,000 and $15,000 for the level of PR to get it in front of the Academy.
Okay. That would be a really good like blog post to have on your website about this. Shortlist, the Holy Grail. Start saving your pennies now.
No, seriously.
But seriously.
Crowdfunding for that.
Because every film, I love that you want to specialize in short films. I think that's amazing. And I think that short films, I think you almost cut out like the dreamers, the delusional people who are like, I'm a feature. I'm not saying everyone is, but like, you know, it's like, cause a lot of serious people start with the short films and, yeah. And there's just, they can become films and they can, you know, win awards. And so I think that you'll get a lot of serious people there.
Great.
And I think the price that you're sort of climbing towards is $1,600.
Okay.
For this base package, not right now, but and as you start getting the data from the people that you help, oh, they got into blah, 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 and then they won this award, and then that helped them get there. Once you start to have all this data, that's giving you more credibility, and you start doing podcast interviews, and you have so much to share about like this, not just the pulling back the curtain on the Oscar shortlist. Who wouldn't want you on their podcast for that episode?
Well, and also the thing is, I was making a list. Like, I have people who can do testimonials or interviews now who have been on some of these short lists and gotten into big festivals.
Yeah. You are ready to go. The only thing that I felt just from what little I knew about you and what I read from your questionnaire was, oh, you're going to have this big heart and you're going to give it all away.
That's what I'm scared of.
So much help, but your clients are not the people who need their cheeks pinched and their butt slapped. Your clients are professionals who are hiring you as a consultant, and they're going to pay for your services, and you're going to deliver what you're going to deliver. So that's the low package of just like, here's your film festivals.
Right.
But now that I've watched your film, I can also do all of this other stuff for you. So then
you
need, and because this is a side business, and you have a job, you want this to be as streamlined as possible. And every time your business starts to gather more admin that you have to do, your hourly take home pay goes down. So I don't think at this point it's wise for you to be like, oh, can you just help me with the log lines and a director's bio? No, right. I will help with all of this stuff, because even if you don't use it for this film, you now have templates that you can use for all of your films. Like, you are getting an education of like what it looks like to flesh out the assets that any film needs. And you might be able to just use these as templates. So you get it all, and it's this much money if you want that education. Or, you know, assets for the film. But because you're just going to go back and forth with emails, and then they're going to want two things, and they'll be like, oh, okay, can we do this third thing? And then you'll be like, sure, I'll just throw it in. And all of a sudden you're making no money.
Right.
So package A, package B, what do you want?
So offer like the whole press kit, not the little pieces here and there.
Nope. The whole thing.
Okay.
Or just the film festival list. You've got to keep it very streamlined, very simple for you right now, so that you're actually making cash money. And it's much easier for someone to make a clear cut decision than and choose four from this list of 12. It's like, oh, too many decisions.
Gotcha.
They're either going to have the money or they're not. And that's probably the way they're going to make their decision.
Right.
But then when they read the testimonials, like, oh my God, and this spa and this bio and this thing, and oh, maybe I do want all that because I don't know. And I think it's a really good point to say, like, when you can see all of these assets mm-hmm. paired with a particular film, you're really able to see how all the pieces link together and support one another, and you'll be able to build this out for other projects. So right. this is a really great investment. And it's not a, you know, yeah, done by a professional with experience. Yeah. So I want you to get very, very realistic, not just about how many hours it takes you to sit there and type it all up and make it nice, but the energy drain. Because when you're writing something, even like a log line, I mean, the shorter and more concise something and precise something has to be, the more mental energy it takes to write that. So I love advertising because it's just like those tight sentences are just like so perfect that took so much time to craft. So you have to be, I want you to take into consideration the actual physical time of the writing of it and putting it all together, but also how much energy does that then take away from the other parts of your life? Because when someone is paying you to do something like this, mm-hmm. what they're really doing, you're over here putting your energy towards your life. And they're saying, hey, can you take your life force and direct it towards my stuff for a while?
Right.
And I'm always like, sure, if you pay me to do that. Otherwise, I have like a million things that I would love to do over here in my own life.
Yeah.
But I'm willing to do this when I feel like, yeah, that's a good trade-off. I'll do it for that much. So I want you to take it all into consideration. Because the other thing is when you're doing this kind of intense mental project for somebody else, it also means that you are taking time away from other things in your life because you have to prepare yourself to be, you know, free enough to write. Mm-hmm. You don't get home from a stressful day at work and just be like, I'm going to be creative now. You don't. You have to set aside time, make sure you're ready for it. And then you have your decompression time after it.
Right.
And oftentimes when people are pricing their services, they're not pricing in that buffer time plus taxes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is going to be an expensive package.
Right. Right.
But it's on offer. And I want it to be priced. It's not about pricing it out of the market of like, I deserve this much money. No, but I want it to be, if someone's like, yeah, Cricket, we want package B. You're like, fantastic. I am up for it.
Yeah.
Instead of like, great. Okay. Because you know it's going to be a lot of work and you're not getting enough for it. You want it to feel spacious and abundant and you really can carve out the time for it and you're excited to do it.
Okay.
So you're going to come back at some point and share with us the amount that you have decided on for that and what's included in it.
All right.
All right.
I'll work on that.
And then it is about who are the people, who are the funnel people that know filmmakers interested in doing short films on a serious basis, who will have films in, that need to get into festivals. Who are these people who can introduce you? Who are the podcasters that talk to this audience? Who are the, and it's just like, those are the people you want to spend your limited time connecting to.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to reach every single filmmaker out there, you want to find the people who are already talking to them and see if they can introduce you to their audience.
Perfect.
And you have so much goodness to give them. You can't pulling the curtain, because people like aspirational things too. So they may not be ready for the Oscar shortlist, but I guarantee anybody making a short film has had the thought go through their head of like, ooh. Yes. So that's a great topic, pulling the curtain back on what's behind the Oscar shortlist. That's a good topic. Another one is you take those, however, like 17 secrets that every filmmaker, 17, it's good to pick a weird number too. 17 secrets. Then it's like, that's very precise. Like she has 17 things. And then you go on a podcast and you go, I am going to share 4 of my favorite, but I have a list of 17 and they're all really important, but you get that list, you know, all my clients get that list. Now you see how with that one sentence, now people know you, oh, she has clients. Okay. Right. Okay. Right. Okay. All my clients get the full list, but today we have time. So I'm going to for 4. So I handpicked these just for your audience.
Yeah.
And if those 4 and you give your best, you always give the best because people are like, Jesus, if that's like what she's giving me, what else does she have?
Love that.
Yeah, you always give your best tips and your best information. And people think like, oh, but I should withhold that. It's like, no. People don't pay you for your information. People pay you to have a boutique experience of you putting your brain on their project specifically. The information is a dime a dozen. Information is not as valuable. If you're like a coach and consultant, people are paying you because they want this interactive experience. So you can give your best stuff out there.
Right.
You tell them it's the best. But you just give it to them because they'll be like, ooh, those are good tips. Mm-hmm. I wonder what else she knows. So does that cover kind of the main things you were asking me, or is there something that I left out?
It really does. And I think that one of my takeaways is that this is different from having private clients is different from working in an educational environment. And that I think I need to think more about what exactly that means in terms of both how I'm interacting with people and how I present myself.
Yes. And the phrase I want you to give you as your mantra is, I am not here to save anyone from their learning experience.
Where were you like 30 years ago, Christine?
I believe you have tried to save a lot of people because you have a big heart. Smart, capable people usually have big hearts and they get in their own way. Yeah.
And I totally relate to Cassandra, the mythological character who could foretell, who knew what was going to happen, what disaster was going to happen. That is totally me. What is my mantra? I am not here to save people from their educational experience.
From their learning experiences.
Uh-huh.
Because if you try to intervene and save someone from themselves when they're not actually asking for that kind of help, you only prolong the amount of time until they learn.
Okay.
It's like helicopter parents who are always stepping in to protect their teenagers from or their college students. And it's like, you are literally just prolonging the time it's going to take for them to learn this, because they are going to learn this stuff. And they're either going to learn it at 22 or 45.
Right.
And one of those is less embarrassing. Let them learn on their first film versus their fourth.
Yeah. Excellent point.
Yeah. And that builds your reputation as she's smart. She works with really great people who are serious and who go on to do great things. Mm-hmm. So, but it's your job to hold the center of that and to let people step up to the plate as professional. And they pay you in advance. They do not pay you on time of delivery.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. In full.
I heard that.
In full, in advance. Awesome.
Thank you so much.
You are so welcome.
I really appreciate it. Thanks. This is so helpful.
Oh, good, good. And are you going to like build out a website, little website?
Yes. Okay. I'm going to do that. I have some other plans. I've already written an article for Backstage, and I want to do more of that and go to a couple of other places.
And I'm glad that you're saying that you already have the marketing ideas, because you don't need a website to start getting clients for this. All they need is your email address, because you can tell them, here's packaging. You can make a little PDF that you just send out and go, oh, here's how I do business. You may never need a website. You could just be this one wonderful person who's passed on from person to person, and they have to be in the know to have you. Who knows?
Maybe so.
But don't let not having a website stop you from starting this thing.
Gotcha.
You're ready to go, pretty much.
Okay. Wow. That's terrifying to hear, but yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I think.
Welcome. Yeah. Yeah. That nerves is just the other side of the coin of excitement.
It's yeah.
Like, if you're nervous and excited, you're on the right path.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Yay.
Thank you, Christine.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Hi, Elena.
I came today after how, I don't know how many months it's been since I've been here. Because I was telling Ruthie came over today to bring me food. Yay, Ruthie, food. And so I said, the only thing I have on my calendar today is cash flow for creatives. I said, but I it's become almost a symbolic thing that's aspirational only, because I don't ever go, because I feel like I've been so unfocused on growing my business, you know, for the past, you know, 9 months probably. And, but I also feel like I'm starting to get in that place where I want to, and I feel capable of starting to think about that again and start doing stuff again to build my business. And I think now is the right time of the year to think about that, you know, for a person that works on taxes, because the first 6 months of the year are kind of crazy, and you can't really think about growing your business during the first 6 months of the year. So the second 6 months of the year is more that time. So I came for inspiration, which has been great. You know, this inspiration, I'm like so happy and proud of Cricket. And, but anyway, so I just wanted to say hi and say, you know, I'm glad to be back, you know, after a long, long absence. And Ruthie had to leave because she had to go home for another meeting. So,
yeah. I'm assuming you got business. Did you enjoy the business that you got?
I did. And I did, you know, I did my clients that basically came back, and some new ones that were referred. I didn't go out, and I just did absolutely nothing. I don't think I could have done less to try to build my business during the first 4 months of the year. I just kind of did people's taxes, and, you know, and then, and the people that, you know, I got very busy both with taxes and with work, you know, with acting work the first 2 weeks of April. So anybody that wrote to me at the last minute and said, hey, do you still have time between now and April 15th? I very truthfully said, no, I do not. But you go, girl, you get your tax, you get your extension done, and I will see you after May 1st. Like, I was so bold about just saying, I wasn't like, sorry. I was just like, yeah, I was just completely booked. So I will be very happy. And people were like, I'm not sure I can do my own extension. And I'd write back, I'm like, you can do it. It's super easy. I have confidence you can do it. Like, that's the time I spent was on emails saying, you can do it. Don't worry. Here's a link. Bye. And so some people disappeared and some people came back. And, you know, I had an appointment last week to do somebody's taxes, and I'm going to do another one next week or week after. And yeah, so I have a couple people that are still you know, saying they're going to get it done. I'm just reminding everybody that, you know, once again, September and October is not going to be the best time to try to, you know, slam it in at the last minute. So let's try to get it done, you know, while it's still officially summertime. So, but yeah, so I did get people coming back and referrals and stuff. So
really, when we look at your year, for when you have to like do a little bit of marketing, January, you just want to be like, hey, mm-hmm. it's starting, mm-hmm. make your appointment, get your 1099s together, like that thing, mm-hmm. right? And then you do the work, January, February, March, April. And then come like then in May and June, you can deal with the people who, you know, come back right after, like, oh, let's do the extension.
Right.
So then July and August, you want to just kind of start to be like, hey guys, if you need an appointment to file your taxes in September, October, let's make those now. Let's get those on the books now. This is what you want to do. And then September and October, you're doing the work. Does anything need to be really said in November or December? Like, get your stuff together, get your charitable donations in. Like, is there anything to say?
Yeah, I think November and December could be the time of, you know, reminding people about charitable donations. Maybe that is the time of year to look back at your year and see how you've been spending your money. Is it all categorized correctly? Like, do you have all your ducks in a row? Because that's my thing, is that you should have your ducks in a row all year long, so that then when you get ready to do your taxes, it's just a very simple process of just grabbing that information. Whereas the old way was wait till you're going to make your appointment and then start scrambling to find all the documents and the numbers and all that.
Yeah. And it might be also one thing that you can talk about in July and talk about in December, is November, December, is if you haven't got a computerized accounting system, this is the perfect time to set yourself up with one. Here are some people you can use, because it's the end of, you can start the year or at the halfway mark of the year.
You know,
take some time in the summer and do the first 6 months of this year, get on track, hire this person. It'll make everything so much easier for us when we do your taxes.
Yes. Yes.
That's a good thing to talk about. So really, if we want to keep this to like the bare minimum, you're just popping your head out of the sand July and August, November, December, January of every year to do a little bit of extra marketing.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the year you do acting in your life and do the taxes.
Right. Right.
So then the question that you want to ask yourself when you have a little bit of extra energy, and I think especially because November, December, and January, everyone's busy, but there's also a lot of things for you to talk about at that time of the year. But what might be good use for your July and August every year is to say, who is a new funnel person I could find?
Mm.
Just tap yourself into a new vein of clients. Because you don't need that many clients.
No.
But it's good to keep refreshing to add a new vein, you know, because there's so many places or people, because financial planners don't do people's taxes, you know, and like, let's say Miata didn't even have Abundance Unbound, but she just did her private clients. She's helping these people like get back on track. And people like her who are helping people organize stuff, they need to know you exist.
Right.
Especially if they're helping artists. And there's other people out there other than Miata doing the same sort of service.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So just use July and August to talk to your people, talk to the, see if there's opportunities to just reach out to your funnel people and be like, oh, thank you so much. I enjoyed working with so-and-so and so-and-so from you this year. You know, if you have anybody in your community who's getting ready to do their extension taxes, I can certainly have some appointments, like just refresh your funnel people and then reach out to a couple new ones. There's not much more that you in your position right now need to do than that.
Yeah. 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 Cause I can't really grow exponentially in terms of number of clients until I figure out, I have to figure out a whole new business model that is not just me. And I'm not really interested in doing that right now.
No. Doesn't sound like fun at all right now.
No.
I just want this to be fun, easy, and lucrative.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So, and why I wanted you to have a clear picture of like, oh, right, July, August, a little November, December, January. So that when it's not those months, you don't even think about marketing.
Yeah.
And you don't have to judge yourself for not thinking about marketing because you don't have to. So I want that freedom to be in your life of like, great, great, great. I don't even have to think about it. And then now at the beginning of July, you just go, okay, what do I want to do over the next couple of weeks? That sounds like enough. Great. And then don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's nothing I want more for you than this feeling of ease and freedom around your business. Of drama-free taxes.
Right.
Cashflow Tiger, everybody. I'm sorry I didn't introduce her, but yes, she does drama-free taxes and helps creatives and artists do their taxes every year and get organized. Yeah. So yeah, this should just be real easy.
Yes, that's mm-hmm. what I want.
Yeah. And unless you needed to have a conversation about like, oh, who should you reach out to? But it feels kind of obvious.
I have to think about that. Like, other, funnel people. I didn't like last year. I thought, earlier this year, if I had any energy or time for it, I would have tried to figure out like where are all the Chuck Sloan people going, the people that used to go to Chuck Sloan's people, because, right. But I would see Facebook posts where people are like, does anybody know who does taxes now that Chuck Sloan, retired? And I would just go, I'm not going to say anything because I just didn't feel it. You know what I mean? I wasn't feeling like I don't have energy right now to go out and try to deal with, because it takes time and energy to, to sort through those people too, because they're, I had to write a few emails where like, somebody's like, your price seems really high for 2 hours of work. And I was like, well, yeah, but that's not what I'm charging you for. So I'm just telling you that it takes me usually 2 hours to do it, but I'm not telling you that I'm charging you for 2 hours of work, even those emails, it was like some energy, but I was happy to write those emails and get those people off of my, off of my radar and into the category of non-clients, because they're not my people. And then the people that are like, I used to get my taxes done at the Actors Fund and now I'm having a problem from a prior year and I can't afford to pay you. And I'm like, I don't know who you are, but if I were you, I would do A, B, and C. If what you're saying is you don't have $30 to set up a half hour with me, then I'm going to give you A, B, and C. And then I don't hear from them. Then they're like, well, I tried to call Actors Access. I'm like, Actors Access. I'm like, are you saying the Actors Fund or are you saying Actors Access? They're like, anyway. So it was just like, there's been some of that, but I've just been like focused on mostly, batting that stuff away just in as little sticky syrup as possible. Just, look, this is how this works. you know, if you have $30 and you want to spend half an hour, I'm happy to help you. But I mean, I don't even give them my Venmo number because I'm like, I don't really want their money unless they're clear on what this is going to be. So,
yeah. Sounds like you got this.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And I'm excited to, you know, now hopefully, like you said, like starting now, trying to do a little bit of stuff for it. And hopefully at the end of the year, you know, last year, at the end of the year, I was not in a place to do anything. And so I did nothing, and I did nothing in January. So then I was just like faced with, I'm not going to feel guilty that I didn't do any free workshops or I didn't do it. I'm just going to accept everything that comes in and, you know, and do it as joyfully as I could do it. And I'm happy for the income that I did get this year from this and that I'm continuing to get. I'm still not done for the year. And so it's good.
Yeah. I love it. It's a great support. Yes.
So thank you. I'm glad to be back.
You're very welcome. It's always good to see you. Britt, do you have anything?
Hi, Christine.
Hi. How's good going? To see you again.
Good. I'm just here to take in the wisdom. I've been wanting to come to this for so long, but I'm usually with clients, so I'm not today, so I'm here. But I don't really have any specific questions. I'm just trying to learn from everyone else. I already have like a page and a half of notes from your session with Cricut, so I'm like learning a lot.
Awesome. Cool.
Yeah.
It's very good to see you.
It's great to see you too.
Yeah. Cricut, do you have anything else you'd like to talk about?
Yes. First, I want to say that I am here because of Elena, because I met her at a mutual friend's book club like 4 years ago. And she was talking about not Abundance Bound, but Miata's program at the Actors Fund. And it took me about a year and a half to actually do something about that. And it has changed my life. So thank you again, Elena. I know I wrote that to you once before, but
can I just interject and say,
yes,
yeah, I think we're going to say the same thing. There's just so many incredible intersections with everything. And I have a similar experience with why I'm here. It's just very cool. There's so many incredible people in our community, and I'm grateful for all of you.
Yeah. I was going to say so many good people come from Elena. She has blessed my life in so many ways. And that is one of the ways. And yeah, she's just, you know, those people who only know good people. And so if you're from Elena, it's like, okay. You're already vetted. Yeah. Yeah.
I do have a question, and I don't know if this is something that you want to address. And so feel free to say no. It's about organization and organizing myself with this new endeavor. And I'm somebody who has 10,000 email addresses, one for each thing. And that's an exaggeration, but do you have any suggestions, general suggestions for organizing myself, my digital files, I use Google and the Google Drive a lot. But do you have any general suggestions?
So where is your biggest, like, what are the biggest frustrations? Where are you losing track of things or like, missing things?
I feel like I often have too many files, like too many headings and then I can't find things. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about when I go looking for an email, I'm like, I know I saved that email, but where is it? And do I need to save every email? So that's part of it. It's just the email inbox. Mm-hmm. And then another part of it is generating documents for individual clients, generating templates, how should I organize that? Is there some sort of secret number to the number of like file headings you should have, or headings and then subheadings? I don't know. I feel like there's a magical number there that I don't understand.
No. And there's no perfect system.
Okay.
Even if there was a perfect system, it would only work if you worked the system. Like you have to work the system. The system doesn't just automatically work itself, but there is no perfect system. And any system you create, just so you know, as you change, it'll be natural for you to kind of keep adjusting your system. Like I've gone through so many iterations and variations on the theme, you know, so it's not perfect. It's just what's working for you now. And it's also not about being perfect. It's about getting something that works. The goal is for your stuff not to fall through the cracks. So the good thing about email is it has a really good search engine. So everything doesn't have to be filed so tightly, because you can search individual boxes, or just search all your sent email, or search all your trashed email, search all your archive email. That's where I go first when I'm looking for something. I'm like, sent. Well, I know I sent it to Elena, so I go there rather than like, ooh, I filed Elena's email in this thing. I don't file everything, because I know I can always find it in the trash can. Things disappear too, by the way. I use Apple Mail, so everything goes to Google, but then it all comes to my desktop in my Apple Mail. And I know for a fact that sometimes I have seen an email and I cannot find it anywhere, even though I know it should
absolutely be.
So that's not you. Sometimes that happens. I just want to legitimize the disappearance. I can't sense a pattern yet in why, and my tech guy doesn't know. So that happens. And sometimes for reasons, you could lose all of your email. For me, my business is done through my email. Like it has the most just stuff. It's where I collect resources, and I do back up all of my mail periodically. And I have Time Machine running, which helps, but I've had hard drives fail. I've had Time Machine erase stuff. You know, I'm not tech savvy. So when stuff like that happens, it's just like, okay. So the reason I'm saying that is so that the energy you put towards organizing and tracking your stuff in your email isn't so precious, because you could lose it all. So you need to devote enough time so that stuff isn't falling through the cracks, and you're able to do what you need to do in there fairly swiftly, but it doesn't have to be all so perfect and precious, because my God, so many forces outside of your control could just throw a bomb in there at any time for so many reasons. So, you know, it's good. It's there. It's good. But we don't want you to use like your inbox as a to-do list and then have like 700 emails in there. That's not good. So that said, basically the chunks, the big sections of your life inside your inbox for you, Cricket, I'm assuming the school you work for, your side biz, your consulting. So that's the school you work for, your consulting biz, your life. Do you take care of someone else or deal with the admin of anybody else's life? The kids are okay. And is there another big category? Like, do you volunteer on the board for something, like any big association where there's email admin that comes at you?
Not at this time. But I also should say I have different email addresses for all of these things.
And do you have to go between like Google? Do you have to like log in for each one when you want to view them? They don't all come to a central location.
And that's intentional.
Okay.
I actually deleted my work email off my phone last week and it was a miracle.
Yeah.
I was just like, wait, what am I going to do with all this time? My stress level just went down over the long weekend.
Right. Okay. So then what you're needing to do is when you're in your work email,
right,
then it's like, okay, what are the buckets that the email thing it filed into? And do you use automatic, I don't know what they're called, like you can tell Google, hey, whenever an email comes from Christine, put it in this folder. And then it just automatically gets sorted. You sort it.
I sort everything.
Which is fine, by the way. There's no moral value in hand sort my email. Because my little rules aren't working. So I'm like, I don't know why, don't care. I'll hand sort. Mm-hmm. Then let's say in your work email, what are the big buckets of work? Like, what do you have on them? What other folders you're using now?
I have one that's titled the name of my boss.
Okay, one boss.
Mm-hmm. I have another titled the name of one of our VPs in New York who often assigns me interesting tasks. I have one called student correspondence.
Mm-hmm.
I have something called industry outreach, which is just my emails back and forth with film festivals and vendors and that sort of stuff. Those are some of the big ones. I also have one that is called marketing because I work with our marketing department a lot on press releases and blogs and articles and social media campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the big ones. There are lots of smaller ones.
Smaller, like one-off things?
I'm thinking
smaller folders underneath the big folders.
Like, I'm trying to get rid of the smaller folders underneath the big ones because mm-hmm. that's where I think the confusion happens.
Mm-hmm. Because let's say this industry outreach folder,
mm-hmm.
you're putting the emails in there.
Yeah.
If you can always go in that folder and sort by the names of the vendors or whatever.
Right.
And find all the emails that you've saved for, you know, Brownstone Company. There they are.
Yeah.
So you don't need a Brownstone folder because you can just find them right there.
That's true.
So you want to always ask yourself, is this folder offering me a service that the search engine doesn't provide? That's why I'm making this folder. Maybe, and that could be, God, I'm always accessing these emails. Like there's links in those emails that I'm always copying and pasting and putting in. I just want to just save a step and go right to them. That could be something. Or they're super, 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 super important. I don't want to get them lost. I at least want them to know they're on this folder.
Right.
Like, it could be that, but you really have to ask, is the purpose of this extra folder something that the search engine wouldn't provide for me?
Yeah, I think that's helpful.
Yeah. And I'm thinking of my own email and like, let me look at it for a second. So how do you, what do you do with emails? Because the emails that you file are what I call inactive. Mm-hmm. You're just keeping them for reference.
Right.
But how do you handle the things that have active, you haven't yet done it, you're saving it for a different occasion? Like, how do you handle those?
Well, that's a really great question, because I feel like I don't handle that very well. I keep them unread, so that I mark them as unread. Mm-hmm. And I want to just keep going back to them. But I am confident that there are emails from 4 weeks ago that I need to do something with that I haven't been able to do anything with yet.
Okay. And one of the things I also want to say when we're talking about organizing emails, there is no organization system that you can put in place that will compensate for the fact that most of us don't have enough time.
It's so true.
Okay. So this is organizing your emails is about just being able to find things easier and not have things fall through the cracks. That's really the big function. Find them and not kind of like miss stuff. You'll miss stuff sometimes, but not miss stuff all the time. That's what organizing emails does. It doesn't compensate for the fact that every single person who's sitting here right now, we could spend all day with no sleep, 24/7, just responding to our email.
Right.
Because the more you respond, then you get stuff back and you get and moving them around. Like, it could be a full-time job. So you want to kind of treat email as something that's working for you. You're not at the mercy of your inbox, which is a hard thing to do because it's just requests, 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 requests. And it also depends on how you're wired. Because for some of us, we're wired to people please, or we're wired to feel, even if we're not going to people please, we still feel kind of obligated, or we feel guilty, or we feel like there's a lot of emotion around requests, especially when there's so many that you even know there is no way I'm going to get to all of these.
Right.
There's no way. And you have to get comfortable with a certain amount just falling off the cliff. I don't mean getting lost. I mean, you just let them glide and fall off the cliff. And at certain times of your life, a lot of your stuff is just going, falling off a cliff. And you're like, maybe I'll circle back, but maybe it'll just go away. Okay. So I want to say that this isn't going to help you necessarily catch up on your inbox zero. And life is too short to have inbox zero.
Thank you for saying that.
Oh my God. There's a great quote by Alexandra Franzen. And she's like, I'm more proud of having my rich, full life than an empty inbox. Something along those lines.
I love that.
Yes. And having a rich, full life means you're not attending to your email.
Right.
And the other thing that is very helpful to keep in mind is once upon a time, when someone wanted to correspond with someone, they had to actually write a letter, which means they had to find paper and ink and a stamp or a pigeon, you know, and put all that together. And a lot of people thought twice. Do I really need to talk to Tom? It can wait till I see him at the market in 3 months. Like, but it's so easy now. Yeah. So
the ones that make me crazy are the ones that say, hey, Cricket, quick question. And whatever it is that is the question is so complex and multi-layered, and they haven't provided enough information. And I'll write back, come to office hours on Zoom, and they never show up.
Right. Great. You know what you want them to do? Not show up to your office hours. Perfect. That's the other thing about email. This is slightly off the organization, but the other thing about email, you teach people how to treat you and how to correspond with you by the way you're corresponding with them. So I may be up at 3 a.m. due to insomnia answering emails, but I do not send those emails nowadays until, you know, 7 a.m.
Yeah.
Why? I, if you want to keep boundaries around hours, you can't be sending emails at all hours of the thing.
Right. 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 Think
you're always up. Another thing is when someone comes into my inbox with like an emergency, that's not really an emergency. I just let it sit because 9 times out of 10, I'll get an email in a couple hours. Oh yeah. I got, don't worry about it. And I'm like, perfect. There's nothing I do in my business that is an emergency. I'm not delivering babies and doing brain surgery.
Right.
So, and people, because email is so easy, they email in their emotional peak.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I want to deal with them once they've cooled down and thought about something or thought it through themselves or found somebody else to help them.
Yeah.
Let it all simmer. Of course, we all have people in our lives that we will immediately open any email, but it's a small circle of people and you can't treat everyone like that.
Right.
You certainly have to be careful treating people you're working with in a business sense like that. You're not their fire person. And you have to learn who a person is and what they consider an emergency. Because I have clients that I'm like, everything's an emergency. And then I have clients where it's like, if they said it was an emergency, it's really
right.
an emergency. And I know that, but I'm not going to like teach them that I am just at the ready and available to put out all the fires. Not my job. Yeah. Okay. So back to
That's good.
You're in your work thing, and what isn't working for you?
Well, honestly, I think you've said some things that in this conversation that allay my concerns. And one is the thing about life is too short for a zeroed inbox, email inbox. That's one thing. The idea that I every time that I say to someone, come to office hours. Oh, this is an interesting situation. Very complicated. Come to office hours and let's chat. I feel a little guilty that I'm not going to take 30 to 45 minutes to write an email.
Okay.
I feel guilty.
I love that you said that because I would rather you take those 30 to 45 minutes and untangle and work on deconstructing what's behind the feeling of guilt, then take 30 to 45 minutes to kick that can down the road and be like, well, I've pushed the guilt off one more time. It's like, you need to deconstruct the guilt. And I say this to you, Cricket, that was one of my biggest time wasters. I looked at my inbox and all I felt was guilt. And I would start emails off the line, I'm so sorry. That used to be like my standard greeting because it was like, I'm so sorry, I'm only replying to this now because it's been like 4 weeks. And I finally realized that that is just the root of core childhood stuff about, you know, what was expected of me and, you know, things like that. That was just being then projected and I just, so one of the things I stopped doing is apologizing.
Yeah.
I may say, thank you so much for your patience, which is very different than, I'm sorry, 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 sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I also keep my emails as short as I possibly can. Mm-hmm. And I also use an app that's on my desktop called Extra Voice Recorder Lite. It's free. And it allows me to just, because I do everything from my desktop, but it allows me to make voice recordings that I can then just email. Because typing takes time. I don't know how to, I use two fingers. It takes me a long time. So sending a voice message. And the other thing that's great is that sometimes the person needs to hear the tone of your voice.
Agreed.
Email has no tone. So right. They'll insert whatever tone they think. Oh, she must be angry about this. It's like, I'm not angry.
Yeah.
I'm just saying this thing. And sometimes when I'm like thinking something through, like with my assistants and stuff, I can do a voice message where it's like, okay, this is what I think I want, blah, blah, blah. Instead of trying to type that all out, mm-hmm. I don't have to organize my thoughts as much. But then sometimes I choose to write it because it will force me to organize my thoughts. But know that email doesn't always have to be writing. Email can be voice messaging.
I love that so much. Mm-hmm. I actually did it recently. Not for work, but a friend asked for notes on a screenplay, and I was separated from my computer, so I couldn't write the notes. So I recorded them on my phone, and it was so much faster. It would have taken me like an hour and a half to write what took me 20 minutes to say.
Yep. Especially if you're a person who's verbal, and I'm not a verbal processor, but I'm very like speaking and hearing. I prefer that.
Yeah.
Although some things need to be written so the person can read them and reread them and then read them again.
Right.
Until they fully get it. Sometimes I will write out an email and send a voice message saying, I just am recording this so you can hear that I'm not angry. This is the tone that I'd like you to read the following in.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll do that. But this is really important because now you're getting savvy. And especially if you're doing a favor for someone, but even if you can decide how you're going to do this for your clients, but when you're giving people notes, they can write them out.
Right.
You don't have to do the homework for the person. This is a meeting
exactly
way.
Yes.
Instead
yes.
of going all the way to them. This is going to change your life, Cricket. This whole idea of I'm going to meet people halfway and they are going to have to travel their part of the way. And so many people will just be over here and you'll be like, I said office hours, and you'll just right. notice they don't really want what they want, but they'll take it if you go all the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh, this is a little mind-boggling.
Because sometimes I think we think about, oh, I need to organize my email. And it's like, no, I think sometimes you just need to energetically detach in certain ways from the email, like detangle your emotional response every time you see your inbox. Mm-hmm. That
yeah.
make it seem less scary. Mm-hmm. So that the organization part of it is, yeah, you know, it's here or there, fine, whatever.
Right. Right.
So test this stuff out and then you can come back and go, okay, that was what I needed. Or I'm still having trouble with this one thing.
Yeah. I like the idea of a combination of some voice recording and some things written that are templates that have things. I like that combination.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is so helpful.
And you can, and so this is really good, especially since this is at the very beginning of your business and you get to decide how you're going to give notes to people. Mm-hmm. You can say, and then I will give you this thorough recording that you will now have, and you can take notes. They can do that.
Because Christine, I'm a writer first. This is the problem. I'm a writer first. So I want every word to be precise mm-hmm. and perfect. Mm-hmm. And I want it to be the best writing. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't need to be. The best writing needs to be my writing. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love language. I love the right word. I love crafting sentences. I love correct punctuation, but I also have to be like, stand down, Christine.
Step
it's
back.
An email. It's an email. Like, let it go. Like, yeah.
It's an email. Calm down, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is really, really helpful. I think it's, I'm going to have a very different attitude tomorrow when I turn on the work computer that's behind me.
It works for you. You do not work for it.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Go forth. Wonderful, fabulous people. Thank you for coming.
Thanks, Christine.
Thank you so much.
Great to see everybody.
Bye.
Thank you.